going to turn your Bibles to Mark chapter 6. And we're going to start reading from verse 7. Mark 6, verse 7. And he called to the 12 himself and began to send them out two by two. And he gave them power over unclean spirits. He commanded them to take nothing for the journey except a staff. No bag, no bread, no copper in their money belts, but to wear sandals and not to put on two tunics. Also he said to them, in whatever place you enter a house, stay there till you depart from that place. And whoever will not receive you, nor hear you, when you depart from there, shake off the dust under your feet as a testimony against them. Assuredly, I say to you, it will be more tolerable for Sodom and Gomorrah in the day of judgment than for that city. For they went out and preached, that people should repent. And they cast out many demons and anointed with oil many who were sick and healed them. Now we're going to skip to verse 25. Immediately she came in, so we're picking up the narrative here of John the Baptist being beheaded, so a bit of a, just sort of catching the end of it. So immediately she came in with haste to the king and asked, saying, I want you to give me at once the head of John the Baptist on a platter. And the king was exceedingly sorry, yet because of the oaths and because of those who sat with him, he did not want to refuse her. Immediately the king sent an executioner and commanded his head to be brought. And he went and beheaded him in prison. Brought his head on a platter and gave it to the girl, and the girl gave it to her mother. When the disciples heard of it, they came and took away his corpse and laid it in a tomb. Then the apostles gathered to Jesus and told him all things, both what they had done and what they had taught. And he said to them, come aside by yourselves to a deserted place and rest a while. For there were many coming and going, and they did not even have time to eat. So they departed to a deserted place in the boat by themselves. But the multitude saw them departing, and many knew him, and ran there on foot from all the cities. They arrived before them and came together to him. And Jesus, when he came out, saw a great multitude and was moved with compassion for them, because they were like sheep not having a shepherd. So he began to teach them many things. Okay. So Mark 6, there's a lot in there. You sort of find it hard to believe that it's all in one chapter, the amount of well-known stories that are in there. But we're looking here at, I'm looking here mainly at the role of the disciples and their relationship to Christ. So three main things I want to emphasize tonight. So firstly, we have a responsibility as Christ's disciples. Secondly, we have a compassionate Father. And thirdly, we have a duty to have compassion for the lost as well. So if you firstly look at verse 7 to 14, you see Jesus sending the disciples out. Verse 8, he commanded them to take nothing for the journey except a staff, no bag, no bread, no copper in their money belts, but to wear sandals and not to put on two tunics. And then verse 11, and whoever will not receive you nor hear you, when you depart from there, shake off the dust under your feet as a testimony against them. Now I thought I'd start with a little bit of crowd participation, so be prepared to answer some questions. I'm just going to go through a few of the snippets there and see what we think it means in relation to our Christian life. So firstly, take nothing for the journey except a staff. What do you think this implies for our Christian lives, for the lives of the disciples? What do you think it implies? Take nothing for the journey except a staff. Yeah, so not to be concerned with material possessions, quite a practical thing of staff. There's probably something else implied as well.
Depend completely on God for the means.
Yes.
Rather than you take your purse and you take money, or you say, well, I've got enough for the journey. And
yeah, sort of to keep it very simple. If you go on a long walk, you're taking a staff. What does a staff imply that you'll need if you didn't take a staff?
Lean on a staff.
Yeah, exactly. You lean on a staff. So they're not hard questions, the ones I'm asking. But so you lean on a staff. So as well as it being a very simple request, as in you're not taking anything material, it's also implied that it's going to be a tiring journey. It's not going to be a walk around the block. So that's first little indication there. Secondly, no bag, to bring no bag, no bread, no copper in their money belts. Again, that would probably tie in very well with what's just been said, what Dave just said. So no material possessions, and that implies a complete reliance on God to provide these things. It's not, he's not just saying, like, we'll find something when we get there. It's complete reliance, it's stepping out in faith that God will provide these things and they're not taking them themselves. And in verse 11, we see the line, and whoever will not receive you. What might that imply to the disciples before they set out?
Rejection.
Yes. So Jesus is telling them from the off, expect not to feel welcome when you're doing this job, when you're preaching to people. You're not going to be received with open arms every time you go out. And likewise, we should not expect to have that same response as when we go out and witness to others. Now, if this was a job description, the way Jesus put it here, if this was put up on a poster, you saw it online, you probably wouldn't apply for the job with those initial remarks. And it reminded me somewhat of people have seen The Hobbit, the film. There's a bit, one of the main characters, he's offered the opportunity to go on an adventure, but he has to read a contract before he agrees to go on the adventure. And within the contract, Bilbo Baggins reads, funeral expenses to be paid for by the company, and present company will not be liable for any injuries sustained by incineration, as there's going to be a dragon there. Now, upon reading this, Bilbo, he falls down, he faints, and he initially says, no, I'm not going to go. And I feel like if we were to be handed that job description that Jesus talks about at the beginning of our spiritual journeys, we might stumble as well. But like it says, we have a responsibility as the disciples to live this life and not to expect an easy ride necessarily. However, God is not a boss hanging over us or hanging over his disciples there to sort of catch them out. He's not handing them like a contract to say, I can at least rely on this, if not you. He's our Father and he understands us and he has compassion. And that's evidenced very clearly if you look at verse 30 and 31. Now, the reason I read the tail end of the story of John the Baptist being beheaded is because it's quite an important link, I feel. The disciples just been set out on this journey. They probably had positive responses and negative responses. But they hear a friend of theirs has been beheaded. And they've had to, as it says, verse 29, when his disciples heard of it, they came and took away his corpse and laid it in a tomb. And this was a close friend of Jesus as well. So these disciples and Jesus would have been grieving very much together at this point. And as I understand it, it was sort of chronologically, the way we read it is the way it would have happened. Verse 31, Jesus says to them, come aside by yourselves to a deserted place and rest a while, for there were many comings and goings, and they did not even have time to eat. And this shows God, he knows our needs, and he's sympathetic, and he will give us rest when we need it. He's a very realistic response. It's a very human response to this situation. And the fact that the disciples know that they can go to Jesus, talk to him and tell him that, is a testament to the fact that we can do that as well. And that should be such an encouragement regardless of the trials that we go through day by day. And when we hear such terrible news as the things we've heard about the young girl dying recently, in a similar way to hear about John the Baptist being beheaded, we can know that we can take these worries to God and these concerns to God and that he will give us rest. But not only do we see that God has that we've got a responsibility to be disciples, that we've got a compassionate God, that he's also compassionate for the lost as well. And we see that as it goes on. So they're about to desert, they're about to retire. Verse 32. So they departed to a deserted place in the boat by themselves. But the multitude saw them departing, and many knew him and ran there on foot from all the cities. They arrived before them and came together to him. And Jesus, when he came out, saw a great multitude and was moved with compassion for them, because they were like sheep not having a shepherd. So he began to teach them many things. Now, I wonder how many of us in that situation, grieving for the loss of a friend, trying to support your disciples, and people turn up and they're looking at you for like sheep without a shepherd, as it says. I wonder how many of us would have attended to our own needs at that point rather than realizing the need that these people had. I'm so glad that that God isn't like us, and that he doesn't have the weaknesses like us, but he also has overwhelming amount of compassion for the lost. And something that we fail to grasp in comparison. So not only does God have compassion for his own disciples, he also has compassion for the lost. And now we are really in front of a multitude of people to preach to in the same sort of scenario, but we do have our friends, our family, our colleagues, the people that we come in contact with every day that we can reach. And I think there's a challenge there that regardless of our situations, that we go and try and preach the gospel to others. Now, in that analogy, we are not the shepherd, but like the disciples, we have the responsibility. So why is it that we don't always do that? That we don't take that Christ-like step and always witness to people? Is it because we're afraid of losing our respect and friendships or material possessions, like it mentioned at the beginning of the passage? Or perhaps we think that we don't have that, our theology isn't up to scratch to sort of do the gospel justice when we talk to people. I think myself, I'm quite guilty of that, feeling like I haven't read that specific book on how to witness to that particular person so that I can reach them. But I think it's in my doing, it's the way that I articulate the words that I say, and that if I get them just right, that they will be saved. It's not like that at all. The simple analogy is that if a lifeboat was sent out to save people because there was a risk of a shark attack, would the sailors grab their paint and paintbrushes and say, look, we need to make sure our lifeboat's up to scratch because these people, they're going to get on any lifeboat. They're not going to do that, are they? They're going to go out straight away and tell people. Now, our friends and family we witness to might not be aware of their need in the same way that people are lost. However, we need to have that Christ-likeness to be able to look on them with compassion, to look at them in the eyes, to know that they are lost, even if they don't. And throughout reading this passage, that is the biggest challenge to me. So just three points from it. We have a responsibility as Christ's disciples to live a life honouring to him. We have a compassionate Father that is there for us when that life of discipleship is too much and we can take all our worries and cares to. And likewise, we have a duty, therefore, to have compassion for the lost. And like we've seen here, compassion that Jesus had wasn't just an emotion. He didn't say he had compassion for them and then he carried on. The compassion that he had provoked a reaction. So maybe as we come to prayer tonight, we might pray for that compassion, for that concern for the lost, and that might provoke a reaction in us.